Good evening and welcome to a one-night stand with the big band. Bugle Call Rag, featuring the trumpet and orchestra of tonight's special guest on a one-night stand with the big bands, Billy Butterfield. Good evening indeed, this is Arnold Dean, and our program will be brought to you tonight by WTIC and by Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, now in their 28th year of continuing excellence in sales and service. Our guest is Billy Butterfield, and before I begin talking with Billy, I have to quote from George T. Simon to get things rolling. He says, "The roly-poly, pink-cheeked Ohioan blew not only fine jazz, but also a potent lead, as well as some of the most beautiful ballads this side of Bix and Berrigan." Then in parenthesis, he adds, "In a burst of enthusiasm, in the August 1939 issue of Metronome, I tabbed Butterfield as the greatest all-round trumpeter in jazz today, a rave for which I received several rounds of ribbing from fellow writers, but which, as I now look back, I realize was pretty well justified." Gee, that's high praise, and you're compared to some great names, Billy.
That's right. I was very happy to read that.
Yeah. Did you recall that story? You've read George's book, of course.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I had that. Got it in my scrapbook.
What's the first time that he ever got to hear you play? You were with Bob Crosby, were you?
That's right. And George traveled with the band for, I think it was probably about 3 months. He just stayed, traveled with the band went everywhere we went.
Who were the other personnel with the Bobcats at that time?
At that time, Charlie Spivak was, and Yank Lawson, myself, for the trumpets.
That's not a bad section.
Yeah, and Warren Smith and Ward Silloway, trombone, Nappy Lamar, Ray Baduc, Bob Haggart, Bob Zirke, Eddie Miller, Fazola, and Gil Roden.
It was with Bob Crosby that you recorded something that is still very much associated with you even now. It was your theme song, I believe, when
right.
You had your own band, What's New?
Yeah, well, Bob Haggart wrote it for me as a trumpet solo, and originally it was called I'm Free. And then it became a pretty well-known ballad, so somebody put words to it and changed the title to What's New.
Thank you.
Every Lincoln Mercury car has its own distinctive characteristics and style, but they all have something in common at Moriarty Brothers. Moriarty Brothers is offering tremendous buys on all of their cars. That means a summer full of savings for you. In addition to Moriarty Brothers' tradition of top trade-in values on your present car, they'll help you save on luxury Lincolns and Grand Marquis, sleek Montegos and beautiful Mercuries, sporty Comets, and the new precision-sized Monarch, and what a great little car that Monarch is. Moriarty Brothers also has some very bright buys on the new Bobcat hatchback and station wagon and the smooth 76 Capri. They're all at Moriarty Brothers in a wide selection of models and colors. For savings and service, visit your friends at Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer. You know, it's not easy to be the oldest in any business, and Moriarty Brothers did it by providing great service for all their customers. And don't take that line lightly when I say visit your friends at Moriarty Brothers, because if you'll stop in and say hello, you'll find they are your friends and great people to do business with. Our guest on a one-night stand is Billy Butterfield. Gee, that was a sensational recording of What's New with the Bobcats. Billy, how long did you stay with Bob Crosby?
I was with him from about 1937 till late in 39, almost 3 years.
Oh, that's quite a spell.
Yeah.
And from his band, did you go to Artie Shaw next?
I went right to Artie Shaw, yeah.
That had to be one of the finest bands, I think, ever.
The big band with the strings. Oh, he always had good bands, but the one I was in was the one with all the strings and Jack Jenny and all those guys.
Well, you mentioned Artie Shaw, Jack Jenny, and I had the name Billy Butterfield. I think you made one of the most beautiful of the big band recordings of all time. And when I visited Artie Shaw, he doesn't have too many things that he reminisces about. Mm-hmm. As you know, he's not that type of person. He always thinks of tomorrow and never yesterday.
Yeah.
But he's awfully proud of 8 gold records, and particularly the recording of Stardust, which is just tremendous.
Well, that thing took off, and I think it sold 1 million records. We made it in California, and by the time we got to New York, which was about 2 months later, it has already sold 1 million records.
Whose arrangement was it?
Lenny Hayton.
It starts off so prettily with your solo trumpet all by yourself.
Yeah. You know, in those days, when you made a record, if you made a mistake, you had to go back and start again, you know, which you don't have to do
anymore. No mixing on tape then,
right. As I recall that, I think we only made about one or two takes of that whole thing and went in right away, you know. Everybody did real fine on it right away.
Jack Jenny, I think, was one of the underrated musicians of all time. I think he was a brilliant trombonist.
Yeah, I think so, too. In fact, he made a record of Stardust before Artie's, and with his own band.
Yes.
And part of the solo he played on that on Artie's record is part of the solo he played on his solo record. And I think his is one of the all-time great Stardusts.
Yeah. And Shaw was such a great clarinetist. He played, I think, with so much feeling, and I think there's particular feeling in the solo that he played on that recording as well.
Yeah, the whole thing gelled.
There wasn't too much wrong with it.
No, it wasn't. The arrangement was great, everything.
Thank you. also had a great small band that you played with. That's right, Artie Shaw and his Gramercy Five. It puzzled some people because actually there were Artie Shaw plus five people, so there were six of you in all. But, gee, you made some fabulous recordings, and of course, you played mainly muted trumpet with the Gramercy Five, didn't you?
Yeah. In fact, I think it was all muted.
Uh-huh. And who were the other people?
Johnny Guarneri, on harpsichord.
Yes, that was an unusual touch. Instead of piano, he played harpsichord.
Yeah.
Which gave it the distinctive sound.
Right. Yeah. Which he didn't like to play.
Oh, is that a fact?
No, well, the harpsichord is a peculiar instrument, you know. It doesn't have any change of volume. It's all one sound, you know. And you can hit it harder, but it doesn't come out harder, you know.
No dynamics.
No.
Who else?
Al Hendrickson was on guitar, and Judd Donat on bass, and Nick Fatu on drums, and Artie, of course.
Yes. Do you have any special favorites that you made?
I think Summit Ridge Drive probably was the best one all around.
Yeah. I think it was the biggest one, too,
for
the group. Yeah. Another association started when you were with Artie Shaw's orchestra, and that's with Ray Conniff. I interviewed him not long ago, and he mentioned that you and he kind of sat next to each other in the Shaw band and blew your instruments into
Bob
each other's
Crosby
ears.
Too.
Is that right?
Yeah, he was with Crosby's band.
And so when he got around to making a whole series of albums for Columbia, he featured you with at least a couple of them that I recall.
I was on most of all the first ones
when
he did them in New York.
One of the albums is called Ray Conniff and Billy Butterfield Just Kidding Around, and another, Conniff Meets Butterfield.
Yeah.
Who arranged these?
Ray.
He did
Ray
them himself?
He does all his own writing.
Yeah, and he's a brilliant arranger, too.
Oh, yeah.
Were you with the Shaw Band at the time he originally did Swonderful?
Yeah, I think I was.
Yeah, he arranged it, and it sounds so much like what he originally did with his own group, the singing group added to the instrument.
I know that he was writing for Artie when I was with him, but, you know, I can't remember the particular ones that he did.
Let's listen to some Ray Conniff and Billy Butterfield in concert here with Just Kidding Around.
Split on this record, fortunately.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That's not bad, huh?
No. That thing sold an awful lot of records. Still sells.
You still get royalties from it,
then?
Isn't that
not
good?
Much.
It's a handy little thing to have coming in every now and then.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea of how many records you've made over the years?
No. Because there for 15 years, 20 years, that's all I was doing mostly, was recording, you know.
Do you happen to recall how much you were paid by Bob Crosby when you first joined his band?
You mean salary?
Yeah, total pay.
Well, one time, I guess, with everything we were doing, which was included a radio show for Camel, and record dates, and I think we were making about $250 a week.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Great money then, huh?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, like a hotel was $14 a week, you know. $2 a night, and they were good hotels.
Yeah,
you know?
And the taxes didn't take a very big bite either, if
taxes,
anything at all.
Yeah.
You did have a habit of playing with some pretty good clarinet players over the years, not only with Artie Shaw, but also with Benny Goodman. And you mentioned before you were back with him a number of times over your career.
Uh-huh. You know, like he'd get a band together after he quit having an organized band, you know. And or for recording or something, you know.
Your function there was mainly lead, wasn't it, Billy?
Yeah.
Rather than as a solo horn.
Oh, I played some solos with him.
What are the challenges of playing lead as opposed to playing in a second or third chair and playing more solos?
Well, I like to play lead trumpet, and it's a challenge, you know. And, of course, if you're not playing lead, you play second. And generally, most of the big bands, they switch the lead around. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, they almost have to because of the demand on your
level. Well, not only that, but nobody wants to sit there and just play harmony parts all night long. It's not good for you mentally or physically, you know, so mostly.
Yeah, as I understand it, that great original trumpet section that Goodman had when it was Chris Griffin and Ziggy Ellman and Harry James, yeah, and it's difficult, I think, to tell which of the three is playing
they
the lead.
They play pretty much alike.
Yeah, very, very similar styles.
Yeah.
We, Billy, are going to be listening to something that you did with Benny Goodman in just a moment. May I remind everyone first that you are listening to A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands. Our special guest is Billy Butterfield, and it's being brought to you in part by Moriarty Brothers at 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut, with 28 years of continuing excellence in sales and service. This is WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut. I quote from Neil McCaffrey, who wrote, "Many regard the Benny Goodman Band of 1941 as the most exciting, not without reason. This beautiful tune is blessed with Eddie Sauter's Way Out sounds and the driving beat of Count Basie's famed drummer Joe Jones. Solos by B.G., Les Robinson on alto sax, Georgie Auld on tenor, and three trumpet bits, the first by Jimmy Maxwell, the second by Billy Butterfield, and Cootie Williams wails out on the third." Hey, that sounds fantastic. Let's listen to Benny Goodman and the orchestra and Something New. Benny Goodman's orchestra, and that's Something New. Moriarty Brothers of Manchester has a classic car, specially designed for 75, without compromising on luxury and performance, the Mercury Monarch.
The Monarch is built for economical gas mileage, yet it's engineered to provide you with smooth, quiet riding that a larger car offers. The precision-sized Monarch four-door is over a foot shorter than last year's average mid-sized car, helping you to maneuver through tangled traffic and around tight corners. Best of all, this 75 Monarch has more headroom front and rear. It accommodates five adults comfortably and has enough trunk space for seven pieces of family luggage plus a golf bag with room to spare. The 75 Mercury Monarch is built for people of any size, as long as they want precision, economy, and the luxury of a smooth ride. You'll find the 75 Mercury Monarch at Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer. Moriarty Brothers, a tradition in service and selection. Everybody is familiar with the brilliant recording of Moonlight in Vermont that sold so many copies for Margaret Whiting. Many people fail to remember that it was recorded with Billy Butterfield's orchestra. Let's listen.
So hypnotized by the lovely evening summer breeze, warbling of a meadowlark, moonlight in Vermont, you and I.
At what point did you decide to organize your own band?
Well, after I got out of the Army, I had a hit record during the war. Two of them that went pretty well. First was My Ideal, which a young kid named Margaret Whiting made with me, and Moonlight in Vermont. But unfortunately, it wasn't time to start a band because you couldn't get men. They were getting drafted so fast, and then I got drafted. So after the war started, Johnny Mercer suggested I get a band, and I did.
What kind of financial backing did you need at that point?
Plenty. Well, you had to, it's a big operation. You have to get a library, which in itself is no small thing, you know, because in those days you had to have a library at least to start out with, at least 75 tunes. And they all had to be specially written for your band, because you had to have some sort of distinct sound. In other words, everybody with a sound that they like. Mm-hmm. They all played stock arrangements. So you had to create that, and that took we were in rehearsal about 3 months.
Who wrote your arrangements for you?
Bill Stegmaier, for that particular band, when I first started. He was kind of my right-hand guy, you know. Played lead clarinet and lead alto, and did all the writing.
There are a number of things that you recorded with him where you and he were more or less co-featured.
Right.
I can almost reach into the 78s at random and come up with something. Now, here's one, for example, The Sharp Scarf.
Well, that was adopted from The Scarf Dance, which is a classical number.
From Chaminade, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And Bill said he thought it would be a nice thing to do in the swing tempo, you know. And it's a cute little thing.
I have to go back to George Simon and read something here that he said. Billy Butterfield possessed a great potential. He was a sensational trumpeter whose big, broad tone and emotional phrasing was widely acclaimed, and he was featured with the Bob Crosby Band and on Margaret Whiting's highly successful recording of Moonlight in Vermont.
Yet that's Billy, my recording.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. That's right. I never caught that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is with Billy Butterfield and his orchestra. There it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yet Billy never really made it as a leader. He formed his band near the close of the big band era in the spring of 1946 in conjunction with Bill Stegmeyer, who wrote most of the arrangements and was also featured on alto sax and clarinet almost as much as Billy was on trumpet.
He wrote the arrangements.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. For me, the band lacked both warmth and distinction. In other words, George felt that perhaps you didn't have that sound.
No, that's very true, and that's what I was trying to say, you know, to create a sound, and it's not easy. It's a very difficult thing because, you know, where can you go? Glenn Miller had the reed sound, and Benny was strictly Benny, and Artie had the strings, and that was a different sound. Tommy Dorsey had his thing, and I mean, where are you going to go? It's just not... and be a dance band, you know.
Yeah.
Because we were playing strictly for dancing. My band was a dance band.
Yeah, especially at
that
particular
time. So I didn't have
it
long enough to really get it worked out. Because it was only, I started in 46, and I worked a full year into 47, and in 47, the band business just went right down to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody broke up because
yeah.
I didn't break up right away, which was a big mistake. I thought it was a temporary thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I kept guys on the payroll and all that. Lost a lot of dough.
And
but he's right, I didn't really get a sound.
You were not much of a disciplinarian, were you?
Well, no. But musically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I always had a good band, but I didn't really crack the whip like... I didn't believe in it.
Yeah. Like so many of the band leaders did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Glenn Miller, I guess, was notorious.
Benny.
And Benny, right. I understand that Tommy Dorsey could give you a look that would turn you to stone.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were just not that type of a fella.
Well, the era was already falling to pieces when I got started.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're not paying a guy all he wants and you kind of got to scrounge along a little bit, it's pretty tough to get...
That's right.
...to get too tough on a guy. You know.
One other note from Simon. He says he even allowed himself to sing A Sad Mistake.
Right again, George.
I didn't realize Billy Butterfield had recorded any vocals until I went back and dug through the file of 78.
This wasn't my idea.
And look what I found here. Ain't Misbehaving, for example. You say it wasn't your idea.
No.
You didn't want to be a vocalist.
No. But, I don't know, everybody was trying it. Benny was doing it, and so-and-so was doing it. And they said, Jesus, you people, you don't get across to the people. Like, just stand there playing. So I said, well... It's okay with Johnny Mercy. I said, I'll try it. So Johnny says, go ahead and try it. So that's it.
You tried. Do you remember this recording of Ain't Misbehaving?
Oh, yeah.
When did you make that?
I think that would probably be 1947. That was towards the end of the band. We were trying everything. Like I say, we were scrambling around trying to get something to work, you know. Although the records were selling pretty good, you know.
But unfortunately, it was really a bad time to start a band because that is the time everybody else was breaking them
That's
up.
That's right.
with all by myself. No one to walk with, cause I'm happy on the shelf. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you. I know for certain the one I love. I'm through with flirting, just you I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you. Like Jack Horner in his corner, don't go nowhere, why do I care? Your kisses are worth waiting for, baby. I don't stay out late, don't get it go. I'm home about eight, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you.
Did you have a favorite trumpet player?
I had a lot of them. I mean, I wouldn't say, of course, everybody, you got to say Louis was the greatest because he was a combination of terrific guy, a tremendous entertainer, and a tremendous horn player. And I think he did probably influence trumpet playing more than anybody. Of course, I loved Bunny Berry and Vic Spiderbeck and Bobby Hackett and Gazzo and all of them, you know.
You learn a little bit from everybody,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, yeah, sure. You got to, you know. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You mentioned a little while ago, Billy, about some of the recordings you've made with the world's greatest jazz band. I always get a kick out of the title. It builds itself modestly.
Oh, I want to tell you, we hated that title.
Is that right? Oh. Tell me a little bit about the world's greatest jazz band. You mentioned that they work with seven people generally.
Yank Lawson and Bob Haggard were the leaders because they were the guys that got the thing together and got the financial backing, and Bob wrote the library. And so it was their band, but everybody had a piece of it and, you know, a say in it. Mm-hmm. And we just enjoyed playing together. We've been working together practically all our lives, and we thought it would be a good thing to do. So I was with them for almost 5 years. But I wanted to go home and get a little home life in, you know, because yeah. They were traveling pretty heavy.
of the world's greatest jazz band doing Panama. Every Lincoln Mercury car has its own distinctive characteristics and style, but they all have something in common at Moriarty Brothers. Moriarty Brothers is offering tremendous buys on all of their cars. That means a summer full of savings for you. In addition to Moriarty Brothers' tradition of top trade-in values on your present car, they'll help you save on luxury Lincolns and Grand Marquis, sleek Montegos and beautiful Mercuries, sporty Comets and the new precision-sized Monarch. Moriarty Brothers also has some very bright buys on the new Bobcat hatchback and station wagon and the smooth 76 Capri. They're all at Moriarty Brothers in a wide selection of models and colors. For savings and service, visit your friends at Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer. We know that Billy Butterfield is now a resident of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, has four grown-up children who all tried their hands at music but chose other fields. Billy, do you personally have any regrets?
No. No.
You feel the music business has been awfully good to you?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the only thing I ever did. The only thing I ever wanted to do, you know. Even when I was a kid, I didn't want to do anything else.
Is there a time way off in the future someplace where you're going to put the horn away and stop playing?
Well, I don't do as much as I used to right now. But I'm going to, if I can hang on to doing what I'm doing, like with these tours, I'll keep on doing that as long as I can crawl around, I guess.
Right. Is this a more difficult time for a good musician to make it in the music business?
Well, yes, because the studio work is pretty much gone. There's no, you know, like in New York, there's none.
What about the music of the 70s?
Well, I think it's getting better. Music is getting better. They're writing very nice songs now, both lyrically and melodically.
Isn't it pleasant to hear music again?
Oh, boy. I thought it was gone forever. When I was with the Los Grace, we played quite a few colleges, you know. And at first, we were like, figured, well, we don't know how this is going to go. You know, whether they're going to say, well, look at those old guys up there. What are they doing? Or, but surprising to us, they really loved it, and we got standing ovations, mm-hmm. which was a pleasant surprise.
That's encouraging.
Very much, yeah. Because after all, they're a big segment of people, you know, and you hate to lose huge segments of audiences that way, you know. But I think it's like the jazz festivals, they draw a lot of young people.
We have a pretty good one around here, the Quinnipiac Jazz Festival.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've never been there. But.
And the youngsters play awfully good.
Yeah.
Billy, you've been playing awfully good for a very long time now. It's a pleasure to have you here in Hartford, and I hope you keep going for a long, long time.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Our special thanks to a very special guest star, great musician and grand fellow, Billy Butterfield, our guest tonight on A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands, brought to you in part by Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, now in their 28th year of continuing excellence in sales and service. Remember, Dick Bertel and Ed Corcoran will be with you on the Golden Age of Radio, and we'll see you again in about a month with another one-night stand with the big bands. Thank you for joining us. This is Arnold Dane. And we're concluding with Narcissus, Billy Butterfield's orchestra.